This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
That it is. We're talking with Alexandra Kazarian, one of the nation's leading defense attorneys with Garagos and Garagos. And Alexandra, I want to talk a bit about the Koberger case. There was a big document dump that came out last week. When you hear things like hundreds and hundreds of pages, you think, well, this is going to be really interesting. And then there was a couple, there was some parts that were kind of interesting, but I feel like we have more questions than answers. Every time that this happens, there's the gag order that the Gonzalez family wants to have lifted so they can speak. The media, all about that as well. Lots of developments going on. Let's first speak to that gag order. Is this a good idea? It's been kind of an ongoing theme since it's been issued of some people wanting it lifted. Should it be lifted for at least the families to talk?
I think the biggest question for the defense as a defense attorney is, when did the defense get that information? How long did it take for the prosecution or the investigative team to process that evidence? And just like in the Alex Murdaugh case, I think that there is a lot more room in the Koberger case for the defense to argue that it's a very technical case and that the technical evidence, the DNA, the blood, all of that stuff, if we're going to convict him based on those pieces of evidence, those pieces have to be just objection proof. They have to be pristine, and the chain of custody has to be perfect, and they should have been tested immediately. So I think that the Koberger case at this point seems like it's going to be a lot more specific evidence heavy than some of the other cases that we've seen, because if you can attack that, and if the defense can attack that before it ever even gets to the jury so that the jury never even hears it, that would be the biggest win for them. Because chances are very good that even if you have, you know, 16 jurors, right? Let's say we have 12 jurors and then we've got 4, 5, 6, who knows how many alternates. Mm-hmm. Even if you get that many people who can say under oath, I haven't heard much about the case, or even if I have heard about the case, I'm not going to use it in my deliberation. If we all know now that there's some kind of DNA or blood analysis evidence that has been turned over as discovery, and then we're sitting there as jurors and we don't hear that evidence in trial, the jury's going to go, wait, what happened? But I know that there was something else. How come we haven't heard about that? And if we haven't heard about that, they're going to be directed that they're not supposed to. And technically it's juror misconduct if they take that into consideration and then use it to analyze the evidence that they do get. But we're all human. And so I can't believe that a juror is really going to say, huh, oh, well, that's interesting that it didn't come out. But I guess this other evidence, you know, is solid. So I'm just going to put that out of my mind. It's going to be there in the back of their heads. And that's why, you know, all of the pretrial information that comes out and jury selection itself is so important, because the case, you know, you can argue that cases are won and lost in trial, but I think really cases are won at jury selection. And in media cases like this, if you can get out as a defense attorney a theory that the evidence is not good before the case ever gets to trial, you're winning at that point, because you've put reasonable doubt into people's mind already before the evidence has even come before a jury.
Let me ask you about the kind of reoccurring theme that we've been having here since the gag order went into place of the media obviously wanting it lifted, but also the Gonzalez family. Steve Gonzalez, one of the most vocal from the beginning, and understandably so. He lost his daughter. Everyone deals with grief in different ways. Seems one of his ways is being very vocal and speaking out and trying to seek justice. I'd probably be a lot like him, I think, if I was in that sort of situation, and probably not necessarily to my best interests. Is it right, a good idea? Is this something that would be beneficial to the defense of Koberger if this were lifted for the family to be able to speak in terms of, well, there's things that could be said that may actually end up hurting the prosecution of him? Or would it end up hurting the defense of Koberger if you have someone like Steve out there speaking to the media every single day? And I'm sure it's a it depends answer depending on what he'd be speaking about. But I'd be interested to get your insights on that.
If I were representing the family, I would tell the family, don't talk. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want the defense to be able to argue that the investigation was botched because they had this pressure from the family to do things that the family thought was important that is out of line with a regular investigation. You want the investigation to take place the way investigations are supposed to take place in every single case. You don't want emotion involved in the investigation. You don't want it being directed by the family. So if you've got these family members who are constantly voicing their opinions, it could definitely hurt the way that the case is looked at by a jury, because you give the defense the opportunity to say, you know, this is, am I allowed to cuss?
Yeah, all you want.
This is a shit show. It's not an investigation. This is a shit show that's being influenced by people who have nothing to do with the actual investigation. And the prosecution wants to shut up the family, or not shut them up, but the prosecution wants to make the family feel like they're doing the right thing. So instead of actually doing the right thing, they're, you know, creating this circus and bringing evidence in that has nothing to do with the case to try to make the family feel good without keeping their sights on justice and actually doing what's right for the investigation. So it could be very detrimental for a family to talk.
One of the big arguments that I've been hearing coming up about this is tainting the jury pool. And in a town like this, it's like 25,000 people. So there really is probably a pretty good threat to tainting that jury pool, the more information that comes out there. But in many cases, you know, we see people talking right up until the time there is a jury. I could see someone like Steve, and this is just me speaking, not him, obviously, thinking they'll find it. They'll figure it out. It doesn't really matter what I say or what I don't say. Is that a very big threat in a case like this to have it so tainted that you don't have the ability to get a fair and impartial jury, or have something happen where you can end up looking back on appeals and go, well, because this was said out loud early, it caused this person to say this or think that on the jury. They never revealed this. And then it all goes to hell and everything has to be redone.
Yeah, that's an absolute, that's totally a threat to the case, because if he's publicizing things, putting it out into the public, and it's getting repeated and repeated and repeated, and then once you get to trial, the judge makes the determination that that piece of evidence should not come before the jury, it's too late. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, on appeal, you can argue that the jury, there was no way for the jury to put that out of their mind, even with the judge telling them that they could, and even them saying that they could, because it's so prejudicial. There's a balance between whether something is probative versus prejudicial. Is it important to the case? But even if it's important to the case, is it so prejudicial, you know, if there's, you know, a picture of some kind of wrongdoing that, let's say Koberger is, let's say he's, you know, dressed up 7 years ago with, you know, some a sign that says, I just killed 4 college students, right? Yeah. But there's no connection to the case, that they cannot make any connection. Like, I didn't know the kids or whatever. This is completely hypothetical. But if that's said over and over and it's shown over and over, and then the judge says, okay, that's not coming into the trial, there's no way anybody's going to actually forget about that and not think about something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, there's a huge, huge risk that you're going to bring evidence into the case. You're going to ring a bell that can't be unrung. And if the case doesn't get moved out of the county, then it is a very, very shaky conviction if one is gotten, because on appeal, that's exactly what's going to be argued.
It's basically dotting all your I's, crossing all your T's, and making sure that somebody can't just run in there with a magic marker and start scribbling on your drawing or your writing.
Right. You want to preserve the evidence so that it's evidence that's competent, that's appropriate for the jury, so that when an unbiased jury hears the case, they hear the competent evidence that
the judge has decided is relevant to the case. And that's all they're basing their information on. That's the only way somebody can get a fair trial.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Alexandra Kazarian, thank you so much for your insight on that. We do greatly appreciate it. She's with Garagos and Garagos. My name is Tony Bruschi. If you like the podcast, press subscribe wherever you download it so you don't miss any breaking updates or discussions on the cases we're following for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.